want to take an opportunity to thank our host and our coordinator for arranging this year. And I'm obviously happy to have an opportunity always to teach Torah, but especially to alumni. It's kind of a funny thing. This is the second alumni event that I'm doing. Back in October, I did a Chult and Chizuk thing, they call it, at YU on a Thursday night. And I thought, you know, Mirtz Hashem, I'll be here many years, and, you know, I'll have my own Talmidim, and then I'll see them on these various trips, or when they come to here, or we go to the States. But, you know, obviously, being a new Rebbe, so alumni doesn't have a meaningful sense with the new Rebbe. But then I went to this Chult and Chizuk, and it was like, they said it was like the biggest crowd. So I said, what's going on? They're like, well, everyone wants to know, who's the new guy? So I appreciate the curiosity factor. It's totally normal. And I don't know how long you guys are still here, but I'm certainly happy to get to know you guys, to speak with you about life, learning, or anything in between. And it's certainly an opportunity, a pleasure at this moment to give you a little chizuk from this coming week's Parsha. I wanted to start off by mentioning actually a story. At the Siyam HaShas, not the one that was 2 or 3 years ago, but the one that was, I guess, 9 or 10 years ago. At the Siyam HaShas, probably the best speech, at least of that Siyam, the most memorable one, was a great address by Rabbi Yisachar Frand. Rabbi Frand is a famous name and personality in the States and around the world. And I actually was fortunate, before we made Aliyah, we lived in Baltimore for 6 years. And I actually got to know and actually even collaborate with him on some things. He's a very special person, and he is, in fact, a Talmid Chacham and a great speaker. So his speech, he ended the speech with the following story. Amazing, amazing story. About a Jew who was totally assimilated, who was living in the turn of the 20th century in the Lower East Side, which is then was a very Jewish immigrant community. Apologize for my laryngitis. A very Jewish immigrant community in New York, in Manhattan. This particular Jew was so assimilated that he, and uncultured and unlettered, he was actually a boxer. It's a real oxymoron now to think of a Jewish boxer, but there wasn't in history. You could Google it. Jewish boxers used to not be a punchline of a joke. So this was that time period. But he was totally unlettered. Anyway, one thing led to another. I have no idea how. He had one son who became what you and I now call a Baal Tshuva. And unfortunately, as sometimes is the case, because the son was never into learning and religion and the father had no connection, the relationship suffered. Not by any malice, just they had less in common. And apparently what was happening pretty much on a regular basis was every night the boxer would spend hours staring in front of the TV, which was his devotional activity every night, to just watch TV, and his son would learn Gemara. And there was just, you know, at best distance, and in some cases really resentment that they had lost that bonding experience. I guess watching TV together was something, and now all of a sudden the boy just wants to learn. Over time, the father takes great credit and realizes, you know what, the relationship is more important. If I want to keep that relationship with my son, I'm going to have to go to him, to where he's at. And he says to the son, you know what, I know nothing about this stuff, but it's clearly important to you. I'll study Talmud with you. And therefore, totally remarkably, they began a chavrusa. Now, the father really knew nothing. I don't know if he knew Hebrew so well. So it took a lot of time, and certainly Gemara, for such a beginner at an advanced age, was not easy. And more or less, bottom line, they kept at it, they bonded, and after a year, more or less, of learning, they finished their first daf. Incredible to be that persistent. The father was so proud of himself, he says to his son, you know, what an accomplishment. I want to do one of those things, you know, I heard about it from you and your friends, let's do a siyum. And the son is a little bit embarrassed. Doesn't want to shoot down his father, deflate him, but, you know, you don't make a siyum on one daf. But he doesn't know what to do, he doesn't want to hurt his father's feelings. But then he has a great idea. We're not living in Timbuktu, we live in the Lower East Side. Who was rabbi in the Lower East Side already at that point? Rav Moshe Feinstein. See, he says, I'll go ask Rav Moshe Feinstein. He tells the father, Rav Moshe Feinstein, the story, the background, and Rav Moshe understands the situation. And he says, I'm sorry. He tells the son, you can make the seal. In fact, Rav Moshe comes and he joins, has a l'chaim, have a little siyum, three of them. That night, the boxer goes to sleep, fully satisfied, accomplished, and he passes away that night. passes away that night. The next day, there's the funeral. Everyone understands, the boxer. You know, he has a few friends, old people from the old country, from the neighborhood. And who walks into the funeral shocking everybody? Rav Moshe Feinstein. No one was expecting it. Not everyone had known the story of the learning that had been going on in the living room for the last year. Rav Moshe is up. He gives the drasha, his speech. Talks about this man and tells the story about a person at the old age of life who committed himself and learned, and after 1 year finished a daf. And Rav Moshe ends his speech by saying, we all know the famous line in the Gemara, Yesh kona olamo b'sha'achas, desire the whole world to come in one moment. Well, the boxer has taught us, Yesh kona olamo b'daf echad. With one daf, he has been kona his olam haba. It's a really incredible story. And when Rabbi Freyan delivered this, I don't know, at the time, must have been 70,000 people alive, let alone the people who were watching this. He electrified the crowd. But then, what really took it to the next level was Rabbi Freyan's climactic rallying cry. What was the lesson he meant to impart from that story? And he really thundered and electrified the crowd. In fact, it became such a memorable line, it actually became the title of his next book. Let's take a step back. In this week's Parsha, we have a little bit of deja vu. The beginning of the Parsha seems to be total repeat. Hashem pleading with Moshe to go to Egypt and take the people out. Moshe trying to get out of it, doesn't want to do it. Kvad peh, Moshe says, "No, not only Aaron, but I'll be there with you." It all sounds like we've been there, done that. Except for, of course, there's one. In this case, it actually works. Perek Zayin, Pasuk Vav, V'yas Moshe V'aron, Kasher Hashem Osam, Kein Asu. It actually works. They're going to do it. Then the Torah eventually continues the narrative with the confrontation and the meeting with Paro. That doesn't work. The Makos. We're all familiar with the great story as it unfolds in Act 2 in this week's Parsha. But there's one pasuk which seems totally anomalous, or at least totally out of place. And that is Perek Zayin, Pasuk Zayin. There, right after we're told that Moshe and Aaron are going to do it, and right before the action continues, it's sandwiched, mamish, right in the middle, we have one pasuk which tells us, anyone remember? The ages of Moshe and Aaron. Totally, totally bizarre pasuk. Umoshe ben Shmonim Shana, Ba'aron ben Shalosh Shmonim Shana, B'dabram el Paro. Now, if I was writing a history book, maybe in a footnote or maybe some side point, but really, it totally seems to be sticking out. Totally unnecessary. And if you're sensitive at all to momentum or pace, it's like totally breaking the momentum. What do we need that pasuk for? Hashem has been trying, now it's the second parsha, if you will, get the Moshe to agree. He finally gets him to agree. Moshe's going to go. And we have this pause, this parenthesis. You should know, Moshe was 80 and Aaron was 83. Why is it important that we know that information, Davka, at that moment? Do we need? Is it that important to us, exactly how old they were? Doesn't seem to me to be in any obvious way necessary. It really, if you look at the Parsha as a unit, it really sticks out. So a number of years ago, I saw a very bold explanation in the Sefer Oznayim LaTorah. If you're not familiar with that Perish, Kedai to become acquainted. Zalman Sarotskin, was known as the Lutzke Rav, was a Rav in Europe, in Lutzk. Actually, I'm not exactly sure if he went through the camps or not. I don't know when he left Europe, but he lived during time and survived the era of the Holocaust. Actually, eventually made it to Israel, and he passed away here in Eretz Yisrael. He was considered one of the Gedolim in that post-Holocaust generation in Yerushalayim. And has children and grandchildren who are major Torah leaders on multiple continents, both in Israel and in the United States right now. Sarotskin family, very well-known family. So the Oznayim LaTorah, which is a very, very important, very fascinating, one of the better 20th century Parshanim on the Torah for sure. See, he makes the following observation. He says, Chazal tell us of a tradition that of all of the Prakim of Tehillim that Moshe actually wrote, I think it's, what is it, 11 of them? that Moshe wrote in his 11 of the Prakim of Tehillim. Starting with Perek Tzadik, chapter 90 of the Psalms. Which one is that? Tefillah LeMoshe. Exactly. And then that and the next 10 after that, altogether 11. So, Lazayim the Mishpat points, Lazayim the Torah, he wrote the other one too, that's on Shas and Halacha. So the Lazayim the Torah points out that that Perek of Tehillim, Perek Tzadik, what do we say there? Yimei Shinosenu Bahem Shivim Shana. The Imbiburos Shmonim Shana. We take for granted that Moshe lived till 120. But apparently in Moshe's conception, the very first capital that he wrote himself, much more typical by that point in history, was Shivim Shana. And if you're lucky, you have good health, you have Gvuros, you could live 80 years. So what does that mean? That Moshe at that point in his life, at 80 years old, he wasn't 70, but at that point he had already reached Gvuros, he's 80. He had every natural expectation that his life was winding down. He was coming to what we call sometimes the sunset of his life. You know, retirement age, winding things down, taking it easy. You know, maybe he'll take up shuffleboard, or if he's more inspired, he'll take up, you know, a doctor in Florida. At least that's an American social reference. He'll, you know, life is winding down. He's already 80. And yet, we now know that his career was just beginning. Everything that we know about him that we really, really remember and recall, Yetzias Mitzrayim, Har Sinai, leading the people in the desert, all of that was yet to come. And the lesson you see, says the Aznai in the Torah, why is the Torah, it's a Musar idea, he says, that the Torah is imparted to us, so important. And that Judaism, he says, does not believe in a retirement age. There is no such thing. There is no such thing where a person, from a religious perspective, says, the rest of my life is the sunset, is the coasting. I've accomplished what I'll accomplish. Now I can just, you know, reap the fruits and the benefits of that labor. On the contrary, he says, very beautifully, I'll read you one line, Kol zman shemaskinim, the older we get, the longer we live. Mosifim omitz belimud ubetikun midosa. A person has to be constantly putting an effort. It takes omitz, it takes effort for more learning, more character development. On a related point, think about a religious perspective. Why is it that people very often reach a stage of their life where they say, you know, ad kan was the growth, and afterwards, that'll be enough. So I think it's not just that chronologically people make that assumption, but there's also a sense, I think, of people getting into habits. Enough time repeating a certain behavior, so that sends a subliminal and sometimes not so subliminal message to ourselves, this is who I am. There's no need to change because I've already established by habit, by repetition, that this is who I am. And incidentally, I'll just mention as an aside, there's a very famous comment of the Sfas Emes, also on this week's Parsha, which relates to that, not only as a crucial point in the Yetzias Mitzrayim story, but really a crucial point in terms of human, and I would say religious development. When we have the, you know, the Lashonos of Geula, that Hashem tells Moshe. So one of them, of course, is Vahotzeisi Eschem Mitachas Sivlos Mitzrayim. Right? I'm going to take them out of the burdens, the suffering of Mitzrayim. But the Sfas Emes, as he characteristically often does, has a play on words. He says, don't read it Sivlos, but Lisbol. What does that mean, to Lisbol something? To tolerate. What's the message, says the Sfas Emes? The Jewish people were being tortured, it was terrible. But somehow over time, what do people do when they're in a seemingly unending difficult situation? What's human nature? We adapt. We make peace with things. We learn how to be sovel the situation that we're in. It's a coping mechanism, it's a survival strategy. There was no reason to think that all of a sudden some white knight was going to survive, save them. So they had learned, initially, you're reacting, you're chafing against the torture and the terrible things that were happening to them. But at some point, says the Sfas Emes, the people gave up hope of being rescued, gave up hope in a better tomorrow, and they were learning how to be lisbol. Says the Sfas Emes, the first thing that Hashem was going to do was take the people out of their self-imposed savlanut. Sometimes savlanut's a good midah, but when it means learning how to live with something that should be not lived with, unlivable, it can actually be counterproductive, because even though it's more pleasant in the current state, because I'm not chafing every second under the burden of whatever the situation is, but there's also, once you lose that irritation, you also lose any motive to try to extricate yourself from the situation. The first step was a change in mentality. No longer to be so veiled, to just be willing to accept their current reality. So getting back to our topic with the 80 years, reminds me, I think, of a similar, of this same idea. Why is it that some people go into religious retirement? So part of it is they feel like, I'm too old to do anything more. But I think the deeper message is because sometimes, even when we know things are wrong, we could do more, we shouldn't do that, I should do better at Minyan, I should do more learning, I should be better at Lashon Hara, whatever the things are, and are endless for all of us. At some point, after enough repetition, we learn how to live with ourselves and learn how to live with our inadequacies. And instead of always trying to get better and then facing the disappointment when we don't get better, we figure out it's easier just to not try to get better, to be lisbol. Now, Baruch Hashem, none of you guys are 80. Maybe Bogrim, the young guys think you're, ooh, the old guys are back. But Baruch Hashem, ayin haral, derech hateva, you should have many, many years ahead of you. But this is still very relevant for the simple reason that many, many people, again, I'm obviously speaking in general, since I don't know you individually, but many people look at their yeshiva years in a similar way to way other people look at their younger productive years pre-retirement. That is to say, whatever I accomplish, whatever changes I make, whatever growth I can accomplish while I'm in yeshiva, that's going to be me, who I am. That's who I am. Those are the patterns. And then the rest of life is about, in essence, retirement. People, psychologically, often have a religious retirement that starts in their 20s. And again, as you probably know this, especially if you're in university now, right? Even in the non-Jewish, in the secular world, right? You're in an age now where people tend to be idealistic, looking to grow, change the world, etc. But that runs out. At some point, they're going to be 22, 23-year-old, medical school, investment banker, lawyer, social worker, or whatever. And most people then just spend the rest of their lives just trying to coast. There's something, I'm not a neurobiologist or anything, but there's something clearly in the human psyche and human makeup that these years, the years that you're sort of in now, where people see themselves in that growth idealistic mentality, and often it wanes. But I think it's particularly perilous for yeshiva guys, because guys dafka look at yeshiva as being this intense opportunity to grow, and often once they leave, it doesn't matter how many years you were here, but that was my yeshiva time, now I am who I am, and since not perfect, we all have things that we could be doing better. But when I was in yeshiva, I was working on that, and now it's sivlos. I learned how to lisbol that. I think the message here is very clear, very obvious. That is not what we're supposed to do. Moshe is a model for never retiring from spiritual growth, from spiritual aspiration. And even though naturally, understandably, there are different times in your life, different experiences in your life, and obviously yeshiva being maybe the most extreme, where it's concentrated and focused, hopefully, on religious growth, but that's never meant to be a bubble, somehow thing, in isolation. Those are the charges that you get in the moment that are meant to then spill over and have a ripple effect on the rest of your lives. The year or two you spent in yeshiva were the most intense, and Baruch Hashem, even coming back for a week, two or three post, is an unbelievable testament to you guys, but it's also an opportunity, as I'm sure you know, to recharge the batteries, to try to get back into that mindset if, and only you know for yourselves, if maybe you've lost that a little bit, the mentality of not just being willing to be satisfied, but looking to grow. If you give me 5 more minutes, I want to add one other point. I have a little twist on this. Ad kan di oznayim Torah, with an from the stress. But just very briefly, one other idea. It's not just, if you think about Moshe, it's not just that the best was yet to come, that the highlights of his career happen after he's 80. Let's be honest. His pre-80-year-old resume, pretty thin. It's not just that the greatest hits happened after 80. It's that there's almost no accomplishment whatsoever before 80. Okay, he, you know, fought with the Mitzri, and that's not nothing. But in 80 years, that's all you could say about him? There's nothing else that was so worthy of accomplishment, worthy of mentioning? I think with all due respect, it was pretty thin. So why do I think that's important to acknowledge? Because if anyone at 79 would have tried to make a prediction about what Moshe's future was going to be, there was nothing in his resume that would have predicted what he would become. We often, about other people, and I'm more interested in our own self-perception, view past accomplishment, mediocre, excelling, whatever it is, whatever level, as the predictor for future accomplishment. Right? You have that, I don't know if you did it when you guys were in high school, but it's like a cliche in America, you know, most likely to succeed, and all these kind of things. Then you go back to your 20th year reunion or whatever, and you see that that person ends up, unfortunately, maybe not having accomplished so much, but then there's that guy in the corner that no one paid attention to, he solved cancer, and you know, he cured cancer, and he solved it. You never know. Not just because people are quiet, but because some people are late bloomers. Some people are late bloomers. And just like, this is really almost the opposite, but complementary to Oznayim LaTorah, just like we should never rest on our laurels of past accomplishment, there's no retirement, it's never enough, it's also true that we should never be held back by perhaps previous lack of accomplishment. I think that very often we have that problem. Had Moshe thought to himself, listen, I'm 80, pretty much I'm at the end of my life, presumably, and even though we know he lived 120, but okay, 120, two-thirds of his life had already passed, with almost no great accomplishment. I think the average person would have, by that point, told himself, I am who I am, I am who people think I am, I'm mediocre, I'm average, I can't do anything great now, I am who I am, I've had 80 years to show myself in the world who I am, I know who I am, not delusional. And what we see from Moshe is a tremendous, tremendous lesson. The man who was Kvad Peh ended up becoming the man who was Peh El Peh Adaber Bo. No one could have predicted that, probably not Moshe, and certainly nobody else. We can learn from our past, we can build on our past, but we should never feel that we're held hostage by our past. Whether past means pre-yeshiva, maybe I didn't have as good a background as the other person, I didn't learn as well in high school as the other person, or even right now, your immediate past, which is post-yeshiva, but the point is it doesn't matter. We're always, in a certain sense, in the moment trying to be better, but we're all human, we're always looking towards the past, whether we realize it or not, sometimes it's conscious, sometimes it's not, and it seeps in. Now the good thing is, past accomplishment gives us confidence for future accomplishment, and we should never let go of that, never be satisfied. First message. But the second message is that all of us, no matter how accomplished you may be, or hopefully on the way to becoming in our academic life, hopefully one day Mitzvah Hashem for you guys in your professional lives, and that's wonderful, you should all be very successful, I hope. But I'm more interested in your spiritual life. And I'm sure Mitzvah Hashem, there has been and there will be great accomplishment in that too. But I also know, since you're human, I'm sure there's been failure, and I'm sure there's been disappointment. So in my life, there has been many of both. And it's very easy to limit your aspirations based on previous, either what we might call modest success or even outright failure. So let Moshe's life be a lesson and an inspiration to you. There would have been no one who could have predicted what he was going to accomplish. But he ended up clearly believing in himself with Hashem's help. You need people to believe in you. Knowing that Hashem believes in you is an important start. When Hashem puts things in front of you, that's a sign that he believes in you. And in the end, he accomplished great things despite a past which was clearly much, much more humble and much more modest. And this is the message that Rabbi Frand ended his Daf Yomi speech with. After telling that story of the boxer and the lesson that we mentioned, so he coined the following powerful phrase: "It's never too little, it's never too late, and it's never enough." Exactly in that phrase are the very points that we're seeing. Most of us, I dare say, I'll go out on a limb, all of us fall somewhere in between the boxer and Moshe Rabbeinu. We're way ahead of the boxer, and less likely that we're going to become the next Moshe Rabbeinu. Although you never know. But if it was true for both of them, it's definitely true for all of us. It's never too little. Shouldn't belittle any accomplishments that you've made. It's never, ever too late. It doesn't matter if you're 80 or 25 or 23. You can always grow and always get better. And no matter how much you've already accomplished, it's never enough. Moshe's life embodied all three. And Merit Hashem, if we can learn that lesson, we're going to accomplish great things as well. Thank you very, very much for coming. Enjoy your time in Yeshiva. Merit Shabbat Shalom.